Well, good to have your company. Thanks for being there. 131-873, the open line number, if you'd like to get in touch. I guess it must have been about 3 weeks ago now that we spoke with Andrew Hastie, the head of the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security. Now, the purpose of the conversation with Andrew was to highlight this nation's horribly negligent fuel security policies. The Joint Committee's looking into them. And it's a negligence that both he and the major parties, in a bipartisan manner, have promised to correct. Well, we'll see what happens. But look, in the meantime, some pretty wise heads are continuing to warn that Australia is vulnerable and exposed to events beyond our control, cutting off our liquid fuel supplies. And it goes without saying, if these supply channels are cut, the whole economy, well, it will quickly grind to a complete halt. Now, when it comes to public debate around petrol and fuel in this country, as most of you know, most of us go blue in the face whinging about the price we pay at the bowser, and fair enough, we are being fleeced, I think, but these complaints and debates will simply pale into insignificance if the bowsers run dry, that is, if we don't have any fuel to sell, no matter what the price. Now, both Neil Greet from Engineers Australia and Dr. Paul Barnes from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute have written about this in the papers today, and like me, and no doubt like many of you, they're concerned we're not taking the issue of fuel security in Australia seriously enough. As they wrote in The Australian yesterday, they said policymakers and the public have shown interest only sporadically, but that's partly because we're all still getting petrol from the pump, and assume because nothing has gone wrong, nothing will. Well, that's probably very true, but you see, overall, Australians are an apathetic, she'll-be-right bunch. But as both Greet and Barnes go on to say, alarm bells should be clanging loudly today about this issue. I'm glad to say Dr. Paul Barnes joins me on the line. For your time, Paul, thank you very much.
Happy to be here, Michael.
It's true, isn't it, that the conversation around fuel in this nation is usually one around price at the bowser, but that would be a purely academic argument over coffee at one day if there was no fuel to sell.
Well, one presumes that you have the means to make the coffee over which you'll be having the discussion, Michael.
Can I just get you to get a little closer to the phone or something there, Paul, because it sounds just a little distant. But while you do that, you make the point in this article with Neil in The Australian yesterday that the deficiency of our liquid fuel reserves is alarming, not least because it's real, and repeated warnings appear to have been lost at sea. I don't think the reference to being lost at sea is just a casual one. I mean, the concern is the South China Sea and all of this, isn't it? And if there is geopolitical strife to our north, our fuel supply from Singapore could well run dry.
Well, in addition to that, Michael, we also rely on fuels from South Korea and historically from Japan. So the notion of the South China Sea as being a choke point, not necessarily physical, although many of the scenarios our military and other maritime security people have been talking about could suggest that there could be either a blockage or a detour required from our maritime supply chains coming from the most direct route to Australia, possibly out to the Pacific and around, or generally delays of that sort. But equally, Singapore, who we also still rely on for a lot of our refined fuel, they in turn rely on fuel supply chains coming in from the Middle East for their crude oil imports and to fuel their refinement processes. So there's a range of nested vulnerability.
How have we let it get to this point? Because, you know, once upon a time, Australians prided themselves on being basically self-sufficient. I suppose from the 80s onwards, the ideology of globalisation took root and free trade and all of this sort of thing, and it was I'll scratch your back and you'll scratch mine. Economic trading became the dogma. But, I mean, put simply, have we become too reliant and perhaps complacent that free trade and open markets will always operate as they're operating today?
Well, I think that's a very strong argument that supports the situation we've reached. But one of the issues, too, is that over the last few years, our ability to produce our own refined fuels in Australia has gone down and our consumption of them have gone up. And there's been in 2015, as we say in our article today, that there was a Senate inquiry into a broad range of issues of which emergency stockpiles of fuel was one of the elements. And there was an argument put by industry more broadly that the cost of building up stockpiles wasn't warranted given the market could provide emergency supply. So one of the issues that we see more broadly in Australia's approach to energy use and resilience of energy, and national resilience, again, a broader concept, is that there could in some cases be an assumption that there will be no disruptions to various global supply chains, or the market will be ongoing as it has been in place for some years.
And that just seems a ridiculous assumption, doesn't it, when you consider the increasingly aggressive nature of China in our neck of the woods, but also the strife unfolding in Syria. There's a recalcitrant Russia on the cards. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on. And, of course, places like Libya and Venezuela, big oil supplies are very unstable. I mean, we're mugs just to think, oh, well, it'll all be sweet.
Well, that's one argument that can be put. At the end of the day, we have Parliament that has to deal with those things on our behalf. But the critical thing,
God help us, Paul.
Well, one of the critical things from our perspective, and certainly from a national security perspective, is the energy security assessment that is due to be done this year. The last one was 2011. And the central questions are there as where are we vulnerable? What might trigger a crisis, and what do we need to do about that should the crisis be triggered? Or more importantly, what sort of mitigation action can we put in place after we discover our vulnerabilities? Now, this is not a far-fetched thing. This is not rocket science. It's very simple questions, albeit there are complex elements that those questions have to be applied to. If you recall back to the last financial crisis, as a result of those things, circa 2008, large banks have to be stress tested in terms of the way in which they are viably able to continue business and certain degrees of stress. How can they deal with those disturbances? So one of the elements in our article is alluding to the assessment on our security of our supply chains for our oil and refined fuels, etc., that should be done this year. But the rigor at which we have to apply it is not new. We have a lot of very competent people within government who work with competent people in industry. It's just a matter of ensuring that we do this security assessment based on likelihood and consequence, but not with the notion that, oh, this might happen. We have to be quite realistic that there are a range of signs external to Australia that would suggest that we have to take the possibility of the supply chains being disturbed very seriously.
Absolutely right. You made your point in the article yesterday that in 2015, at a Senate hearing, industry representatives, I'd imagine that's petroleum industry representatives, said that there was no evidence that the substantial cost of an emergency stockpile was justified. No evidence. Why would they say that?
I would suspect that there could be, as economics operates, there is a many institutions work in full profit mode, and in some cases, not being an economist myself, being an environmental scientist originally before I worked in risk and security issues, the notion of complexity of systems and complexity of the environment that we live in, and the technology and the energy that we rely on for that technology to operate. Sometimes I suspect that we go for sometimes the simplest solution that works within a market environment. But in some cases, there's a lot of very, very sophisticated and competent economists who look at more broader sets of issues. And we can't necessarily only rely on the market to solve problems, because
correct,
the market is often reactive. Whereas from a national security and a national resilience perspective, many would argue that we need to be able to anticipate the sorts of disturbances that may occur, certainly seek evidence that those particular causal effects are coming, and act before the market would react. So reliance on that sort of system,
yep,
in states of crisis may not be the only thing that the government and the private sector would want to rely on.
Well, it's like with medicine, prevention is always better than cure. You also make this point, and this is valid, you say that if liquid fuel supplies are affected in, let's say, a trade war rather than a military war, you said then the US might be in a pretty good position. They've expanded their shale oil industry extensively over the last few years. They maintain stock holdings greater than the International Energy Agency requirements. China, also insulated by homegrown oil refining capabilities and a significant stock holding. But of course out here, We'd be caught with our pants down, wouldn't we? Because we have less than half of what the International Energy Agency says we should have as far as stockpiles. It's a pretty gross negligence.
Well, it's, you know, it wouldn't be for me to determine whether negligence is an action here, but certainly as a person who looks at national risk assessment capabilities, there's a great opportunity for Australia to act sooner than later to ensure that the national energy security assessment's done. But if you have to look at those sorts of issues, we have two presidents of major superpowers exchanging Twitter commentary to each other, and the countries are moving towards the rhetoric of trade war issues. Now, fuel is something that the World Economic Forum has suggested is one of the major issues that is impacted in terms of cost fluctuation in that sort of trade tension. So we know the signs are there. We know that there is rhetoric being exchanged across the Pacific. We know that we have a reliance on maritime imports for most of our fuel. 80 to 90% of our refinable product has to come in from overseas. We've reduced our own capacity to produce, and we continue to live in a transitional arrangement economically and socially where we still rely on carbon-based fuels for a lot of our day-to-day work. So the broader external vulnerabilities that exist would warrant Australia to ensure that there is flexible thinking and the approach to the security assessments are done as quickly and as thoroughly as possible, and options are considered.
I'm glad we spoke about it again this morning. We'll keep it on the agenda as long as we have to until something gets done. I thank you for your expertise, Paul.
Not a problem at all.
That's my pleasure. Dr. Paul Barnes there from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.